Page 420, chapter 21, Pasuk 12, Pasuk Yud Beis. Okay, in the previous times we learned about the laws of slavery, we discussed in a spiritual sense the nefesh, the neshama, the animal soul, the godly soul, and all that. Now he gets into some practical laws. Maki ish v'meis. If a person hits somebody and the person dies, meis yumas, you are to be put to death. And this is going again based on what the Ten Commandments say, leisir tzach, which means you should not commit murder. So the Torah is saying there are different levels of murder. If you murder somebody intentionally, so then the din is you get killed. Now, the din is, even if you kill, he says even a kid, they old. If you kill somebody, you get killed. The courts kill you. Now, how do you get killed? This punishment is called chenek. This is not chenek. This is hereg with a sword. They kill you with a sword if you kill somebody else. Now, the din is, though, that in order to be chayiv misa, you need to kill somebody who is at least 30 days old. Because until a baby is 30 days old, like we learned in the past, you do not have an established life yet. Therefore, in the whole abortion issue, so to speak, an abortion is forbidden at any stage, as a rule. As a general rule, abortion, once conception happens, abortions are, as a rule, there are exceptions, of course, an abortion is forbidden. But in order to be obligated capital punishment for killing somebody, the fetus or the child that you kill has to be at least 30 days old. Because then they have an established life to them, and before that, they don't have an established life, so you can't kill a person because it's a doubt. What do you mean it's a doubt? If you kill a dead person, you don't get killed. Until a child is 30 days old, we don't know that they have an established life yet. That's why, like we know, when you redeem the firstborn to the Kohen, the Pinyan Aben, you have to do it on the 31st day. You can't do it before the 31st day because he's not established life yet. You have to wait until we know for sure he's going to live. So you can't kill somebody on a doubt. So if a guy kills a baby, let's say 5 days old, you can't kill him because we don't know if the kid would have made it to 30 days. So therefore, but technically, conceptually, you would get killed for killing a child at any age, but you just can't because it's a doubt. And as we mentioned in the past, but it's relevant to know that for a non-Jew, one of the seven Noahide laws is not to commit murder. That is at any stage of the game. In other words, after conception, if a non-Jew will do an abortion, or a non-Jew will kill somebody a week old, 2 weeks, or whatever, they would get killed. This concept of 30 days applies only to in the Jewish law for a Jew.
In secular law, it's considered murder. If you kill a baby after the baby is born.
After the baby is born. And before the baby is born?
Abortion, no?
Yeah, it depends. Some people think it's a mitzvah. Some people think you're not allowed to. That's the whole issue. But the amount of 30 days only applies to Jewish people. And then we mentioned this when we were learning once during the week. In a case when an abortion is permitted, meaning when the fetus is posing a risk to the life of the mother, meaning if the pregnancy is staying, keeping the pregnancy would cause the mother perhaps to die, so then the din is you're allowed to kill the fetus. Why are you allowed to kill the fetus then? Because the fetus then has a din what's called a rodef. A rodef means if I see A running to kill B, and I see A is running to kill B, and the only way I can stop A from killing B is by killing A, the Torah says after I have a mitzvah to kill A before he kills B. That's the halach. Now, if you can if you can stop him by shooting him in the leg, you know, or tackling him to the ground, so that obviously then you're not allowed to kill him. But if the only way you'd be able to stop him, stop A from killing B, is by killing him, so then the din is you're allowed to kill A, and you're not considered a murderer, not even accidental murder, nothing. You're just nothing. So when the fetus is posing a risk to the life of the mother, so the fetus is A, going to kill B, i.e. the mother. So then the din is, you kill A before A kills B. So halacha says that in the case when the mother's life is at risk, and you must do an abortion, it's better halachically for a Jewish doctor to do it than for a non-Jewish doctor to do it. Because for a non-Jew, abortion is worse than it is for a Jew. Mm-hmm. Now what did you want to say?
What about when the A is going to go kill the B? Maybe on the way something happened, he changed his mind or something.
Mashiach
happened,
will come.
And just so he wouldn't do it, but then he killed somebody else.
Yeah, but until you know differently, you kill him.
Or you kill the bees.
Well, you could have, by the way, while he's doing it, you can stop him, say, excuse me, are you planning to kill him or not? No, that's the din. I mean, what's going to be? I mean, you don't rely on miracles. According to Allah, you don't rely on miracles. He's going to trip and fall and...
But if somebody has a gun in his hand and they're about to shoot somebody, well, you can't wait till maybe he's going to do tshuva.
Right. You shoot him. Now, if you could shoot the gun out of his hand, that's what you're supposed to do. No, I'm saying, but that's halacha, whatever.
You get caught for murder. You go to jail for
no,
murder.
No, it's not. Not in Torah law. I didn't civil law, I don't think so either, but in Torah law for sure not.
And they call it rodef because A is running after B. Is this rodef because A is rodef after B?
Right. Right, that's why it's called rodef, because he's running after B. So, in the case of the fetus is the rodef out to kill the mother. Yeah. And therefore you kill the baby before the baby has the ability to kill the mother. Okay, now the Torah says like this. V'asher leitzada, what happens if a person did not intend to do it? In other words, it was completely accidental, he did not lay an ambush, v'alekim ino leyodai, and God was the one that made it happen. So then, meaning a guy killed somebody accidentally, v'samti l'chamokim, God says, I will give you a place, ashayon neshama, that where you're able to run to, meaning the city of refuge. And this din is a very interesting halacha called the cities of refuge, which means like this. If somebody kills, and there's a whole tractate of Gemara Makis that we learned in the Tuesday night Gemara share, there are a lot of laws considered what is accidental murder. Is it going up a ladder? Is it coming down a ladder? Basically, the Gemara says, they learn it out from Psukim, that is when you come down a ladder. To give that analogy. Meaning a guy is coming down a ladder, he trips, falls down, lands on top of somebody, kills him. Or a guy is chopping wood in the forest, a splinter of wood goes, you know, flies out, hits somebody, kills them. That is called accidental death. What do you do, the Torah says? The Torah says, I will give you a place called the city of refuge. You have to run there. And the halacha is you have to stay there until the Kohen Gadol dies. Now, sometimes the Kohen Gadol was a young guy. He would live for a long time. So you have to stay in the city of refuge a long time. Sometime the Kohen Gadol was an old guy and you can be out in a year or two. But whatever it is, what happens, the Gemara says, if you kill somebody in between Kohanim Gedolim, it means the old one died but they didn't make a new one yet. Got to stay there forever until you die. I mean, but even the city of refuge, the Gemara says, if a student was forced to go into the city of refuge, they took the teacher there because he needed to learn Torah. Basically, there are 6 cities of refuge. When Mashiach comes, there'll be 9. That this is the place that they had to run to. So now the question is, what?
If it's Mashiach will come, why didn't he die? Why didn't he
go? Okay, that's nothing. There's a whole sikh from the Rebbe about that. But the din is as follows. Until you get to the city of refuge, the Goel Hadam, who's called the Avenger, meaning a family member of the one that was killed accidentally, has a right to kill you. And if he kills you, he's completely innocent. Once you get to the boundary of the city of refuge, and once you put your foot over the boundary, and he kills you, then he's a murderer. If you ever, during the duration of your stay in the city of refuge, walk out of the city and the avenger sits there and is waiting for you and kills you, he is innocent. You have to be in the city of refuge to be protected. So the famous question is asked. A guy is coming down a ladder. His best friend is underneath the ladder. It's not in any way, it's a, you know, trip to suicide faller. The guy is his best friend and he falls on his best friend and he kills him. What in the world did he do wrong? Why does he need to run to the city of refuge to the extent that the Gemara says the expression exile is in certain things stricter and more severe than death? You know, death, it's all over. Regardless, you're living a life of limitations. You know, you can't go where you want, you can't do what you want. So why in the world should the Torah say you have to run to the city of refuge? What did the guy do already? He didn't do anything. So the commentaries explain, the Chassidus elaborates in Salat, and it says as follows. As the Gemara uses it, it has an expression, Megalgalon Schus Aidei Zakai V'chayv Aidei Chayva. Good things happen through good people, and bad things happen through bad people. So the fact that a murder, even though it's accidental, the fact that a death came about through you shows that you have a connection to murder. Because if you have no connection to murder in any way whatsoever, God would have never allowed such a terrible thing as murder or killing somebody accidentally to come about through you. As there's a pasuk that says, Lo yu'una l'tzadik kol oven, God does not allow any evil or bad to come through a tzaddik.
Can you explain what's the connection to murder? Somebody is murdered already, but nobody saw this. What is the connection to murder? What
does
it mean?
A guy can have a tendency of, in his mind, thinking about killing people. So the fact that a person has...
You're telling me there is no religious person in the world had a car accident and killed somebody by the car or something?
Yeah, so... The fact that something terrible like that happened through that person...
Whatever. That
so shows again. There's a lot of stages in accidents, you know, and that's why the Mefarshim ask a question. It's an interesting question they ask. Why is it some guys end up being in the city of refuge for 40 years, and some guy could be out after a year? You know. Everything's coming from God, right? So this guy's punishment is to be 40 years in the city of refuge. If the Kohen Gadol's young and he dies 40 years later, so you're stuck there 40 years. Another guy's get out in half a year, a year. Why is it? It's not the equal punishment. 39 lashes is equal for everybody. Murder is equal, you know, getting killed is equal for everybody. This is a funny thing. You have to run to the city of refuge, and every person is different. This guy has to stay there a long time, this guy a short time, this guy a middle time. Why is it? So they write that this is the way God set up the system. In other words, if you have a greater connection to murder, you're going to be there longer. If you have a lesser connection to murder, you're going to be there shorter. So whatever it is, God sets it up in a way based on how much repentance that you need. And the same thing is not only by murder. This explains another general concept. It says in the Torah that if you sin accidentally in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, when they had sacrifices, you have to bring a sin offering. Okay? A guy doesn't know it's Shabbos and he does something wrong, and because of that, he has to bring a sin offering. I mean, he doesn't know it was wrong. If you know it's wrong, it's one thing. If you don't know it's wrong, you don't know. I mean, why should the guy be guilty? The answer is the fact that God allowed something, a sin, to come about through you shows, God says, that you have a connection to it, and for that you need atonement by bringing a sacrifice, or in this case, you have to run to the city of refuge. That is the atonement for the person.
If somebody says, I'll kill you, and this is connection to murder, and
you better believe it. We spoke about the Shabbos. If somebody says, I'll kill you, in the world of speech, you kill them.
Like a fish.
If somebody thinks, I'm going to kill you, in the world of thought, you kill them. Now, this world, you didn't kill them because it's an action world.
Some people say it without thinking.
Most people talk without thinking. Now, Rashi says over here, what does it mean, Valakim ino liyodei? That means God made it happen. So Rashi gives him Rashi brings us called Moshe Lakadmeini, meaning as follows. There are times, and it's God runs the world in a funny way. We don't really understand the way God works. But there was a guy, perhaps, that killed somebody intentionally, but there are no witnesses. Okay, so no witnesses. You know, you can't kill the guy because there's no witnesses to prove it. So somebody might think, hey, the guy got off scot-free, right? So the Torah says, no, that's not what's going to happen. One day, a guy who killed somebody accidentally and nobody saw will be on top of a ladder, and the guy that killed somebody intentionally would be on the bottom of the ladder, and he'll fall on top of him, and he'll kill him in front of people. So this guy got his punishment for killing somebody intentionally, so God gets you back. And this guy, now that you killed somebody unintentionally in front of people, so now, you know, you have to run. So everybody gets their share of punishment. In other words, the guy that got killed accidentally is because he was supposed to die. As we learned many times. So that's what it means. God made it happen. God brought it, because as in English, God caused it to come to his hand. So Hashem says that I'm going to give you the ability to run to the city of refuge. Now, God pays back everybody what they deserve. We shouldn't think we get away with it. You know, God didn't see. He was sleeping that day, went on vacation that day. He didn't see. God runs the world in a way. He doesn't punish right away, and he punishes sometimes later, sometimes earlier. You know, God has his way of doing this. Okay. Now, what's interesting, just connecting this to Elul, this is one of the acronyms of Elul. If you look in the Chumash, when it says in the second line of the page, right where it says, V'alikim ina liyadi v'samti loch, so ina begins with an aleph, liyadi begins with a lamid, v'samti begins with a vav, and l'cho begins with a lamid. So aleph, lamid, vav, lamid is the month of Elul. And therefore it's brought down that this is the concept of learning Torah, of studying Torah, and is also the concept of a person being able to run away into the city of refuge, which protects a person from all evil. Meaning, as Chassidus explains, there is an avenger that wants to kill us. Who is the avenger that wants to kill us? It's called the Yetzer Hara. The evil inclination of the person wants to kill us. And therefore, if a person wants to be protected from the avenger, you have to run to the city of refuge. What is, in a certain sense, the city of refuge that protects a person from the evil avenger? That's the words of Torah. When a person studies Torah, so that protects the person from the Yetzer Hara that wants to come to kill the person, to cause him to sin. Because the Gemara says that God created the Yetzer Hara. He created the Torah to be the against, the opposite of the Yetzer Hara. And then the Gemara says, Divrei Teira Kultin, Teira also protects the person. We find earlier in Chumash, when the flood was taking place, and God told Noach to build a Teva. Okay? A Teva means an ark. But Teva also means words. And when God said to Noach, Boy ala Teva, come into the ark to be saved from the flood waters, the Baal Shem Tov said, God also said to Noach, Boy ala Teva, go into the word. Meaning, when you go into the words of Torah, and davening and prayer and all that, so that protects the person from the flood waters of the world, from the Katrinas of the world, I mean, that want to destroy the person, meaning the Yetzer Hara wants to destroy the person. So that's the concept of the Adi Miklat, the city of refuge, that God gives the Jew. But the reason why the person needs forgiveness is the fact that a terrible thing came about through them shows that they're connected to it. Okay, that's an important concept in Judaism to keep in mind. Good things happen through good people, bad things happen through bad people. Okay, then the Torah says as follows. What happened if a man will act intentionally to kill his friend? You should take him to die. And Rashi says the simple meaning of the pasuk is that if a Kohen was working in the Beis HaMikdash and he killed somebody accidentally and he's going to run to the altar to be saved, so the Torah says that doesn't help. If you kill somebody intentionally, you grab him away from the altar and if you can testify against him, you put him to death. Another halacha the Gemara learns out from this, mi'im is b'chiti k'chen olamos, means that even though he's in the middle of working, the Kohen's in the middle of his job. So you can think, let him finish the animal, let him finish the sacrifice, and then take him to kill. The Torah says, no. Me'im izbechi, from the middle of the job, you take him to kill. You get him killed. There's another interesting concept over here. People ask a question. A kills B. Okay? Intentionally. B is already dead. Why in the world do they have to kill another person? B is dead, right? He killed him. He's dead. So why do you want to kill A for?
An eye for an eye.
Yeah, but what do you gain by it?
You stopped him from killing the other guy. B, C, and D, and E.
So lock him up somewhere.
It's expensive.
It's expensive. By the way, no, there's an explanation to this, but it has to do with what you're saying also. There is no, we mentioned this in the past, there is no jail term in Torah. Like in American law, in civil law, in Gaiusha law, around the world basically, there is a concept called jail term. You do a certain crime, you sit 10 years, 20 years, life, whatever it may be. There is no such thing in Torah law. Even the Ari Miklat, even the city of refuge, was not jail.
There's punishment though.
One second. There was not jail. Ari Miklat is not jail. It's a city. The guy can live there. He could do business there. If he's a student, you send his rabbi there to teach him. He's just confined to a city. Confined to a city is not jail. Jail is basically when they lock you up in a room and they do not allow you to function as a regular human being. And the Rebbe explained, that's why in Torah law there is no such thing. Because a person was created for a purpose, to do things. Like it says, l'sakin, to fix the world. There are certain sins that a person does, like murder, is so bad that forfeits the person. The person forfeits his ability to continue being productive. So the Torah says, if that sin does not allow him to continue being, what? Continue to be productive, kill him. But to keep a person alive, not able to be productive, is against everything the Torah stands for. If you're alive, it's to be productive. If you can't be productive, then your life is over. And therefore, in fact, it's interesting, even in the American system, the Rebbe was for rehabilitation rather than jail. To bring the person, put the person back into the world, rehabilitated in a way that they'll learn how to behave properly. So in Torah law, there is no concept of jail. So you either, if the person killed somebody, or any other sin that the Torah says you get capital punishment for, the Torah says you lose your, you forfeit your right to be productive, and therefore you get killed. And by the way, the death, putting somebody to death, is the kapara and the atonement for the crime they committed. So that itself is a kapara.
So either you kill him or you let him go free.
Yeah.
Nothing in between.
There's no in between. There's no jail term. You find in Torah a concept of jail, like in Chumash you find the guy was chopped wood on Shabbos. They didn't know what type of death to kill him, so they put him in jail as a holding place until Moshe Rabbeinu told him what to do. Sometimes a person that was a menace to society, but they didn't have a crime to kill him. So over there, to keep him off the streets, not as a punishment, just to keep, for his own benefit, to keep him off the street, that he shouldn't be able to commit more crimes. Or the Gemara says, there was like, in the Gemara's time, or whatever, that there's, you know, like girls that Nebuch were mentally retarded, and all the men would take advantage of them. So, for the benefit of the girl, they would lock her up. But not in a jail, so to speak. They would just keep her off the streets, that nobody should defile her, whatever, you know. But that was not as a punishment. There is no jail term in Torah as punishment. Because Torah says, you are either, if you're alive, you have to be productive, and if you can't be productive, then you have to die. So even though one person was killed already, the second person still has to be killed. Now obviously, in order to kill a person, the Gemara says that any big court, because we learned already, when we're discussing the courts, to give capital punishment, you need to have at least 23 judges. 23 judges, and you need a majority of two, and so on. But the Torah says, I mean, the Gemara says, there's two opinions in the Mishnah. One opinion says, any court that killed somebody in 70 years was a killing court. And the halacha is not like that. The halacha is once in 7 years. That means any Jewish court that killed somebody once in 7 years was called a killing court. They had a reputation of being a killing court. Because any way of Torah that you can keep a person alive to be productive, especially after the fact that this guy is dead already anyway. So if there's any loophole within halacha to keep the guy alive, to keep him productive, you do everything possible. But if there's no other choice and you have to kill him, you have to kill him.
Rabbi, so what you're telling us tonight is that the Jewish people faced capital punishment long before any society in the entire world, because the Torah is older than the world.
You're right.
Fantastic.
Look in the Chumash, it speaks about capital punishment. You don't need me to tell you that. Okay. Okay, so now if the person kills somebody intentionally, even from the Mizbeach, you have to pull him away and, you know, take him, even if it's a Kohen, you take him right away. Now, the Gemara learns out from this, because the commentators ask a question over here. The Torah is going in a funny order. It speaks about, in the first passage we learned in 12, it says, if you kill somebody intentionally, you get killed. In 13, it says, if you kill somebody accidentally, you run to the city of refuge. In 14, it says again, if you kill somebody intentionally, then take him away even from the altar. I mean, the Torah is jumping around from accidental to intentional, back to accidental. Why doesn't the Torah finish accidental, then go to the intentional? So they say this teaches us, one of the answers is it teaches us, that anybody that killed somebody, whether it was intentional or accidental, ran to the city of refuge. The first place they ran was city of refuge. And we should have mentioned this before. In Israel, there were 6 cities of refuge. And they were divided evenly, okay? Like a sixth of the country, even though 3 were in Eivar HaYardim, but there were 3 and 3. But it's like they spaced out the city of refuge in a way that it was closer, more or less, to anybody. Along the way, they had signs, miklat, with an arrow, that a person should know if he's running away for his life and the avenger is chasing him and he wants to kill him. So the Torah made it as easy as possible for the guy to locate, didn't have MapQuest in those days, to get the city of refuge. So on the crossroads, they would have a big sign, miklat, with an arrow that a person should know which way to run, which way was the city of refuge. Okay? Next. Yes?
How about if they go into the city of refuge and they commit another crime in that city?
You mean accidental death?
Accidental.
So the Gemara says, huh? So the Gemara says, then he had to go from neighborhood to neighborhood. He had to move from one area to another area.
Miklat,
no, in the same city, you have to move mishchuna lishchuna, from neighborhood to neighborhood.
Something new.
Huh?
Change your neighborhood.
I don't know, but something new.
Yeah. In Miklat, it wasn't one place with the building that they lived there.
It's a whole city.
He was living in private house.
It depends how much rent he. It depends what how much he was able to afford rent. Okay, that's this din. Now the Torah goes to another interesting din. What? Well, Mark, what? Yeah.
There will still be.
We have a 2-for-1 sale today. Yeah.
There will still be Torah's law in that city.
Yeah.
The city of refuge.
It's a Jewish city.
You got a shul. You got
another murder. They will get killed, right?
Well, intentionally, yeah. I mean, whatever. It was a Jewish city. It was. It just, the guy had to move away from his original place, that's all.
And obviously if there someone kills intentionally...
Yeah, if you kill somebody intentionally, a city of refuge, you get killed. I mean, that you know, there's a court there, there's a whole system. Now the Pasuk says, Umaki ove v'ime meisumas. If somebody hits his father and mother, they get killed. Now this then applies only if you make them bleed. If you cause them to bleed. If you just smack them in the face, not that you're allowed to, by the way. I mean, don't think that, I don't want anybody going away saying they heard, learned tonight that you can smack them in the face. You're not allowed to smack anybody in the face, really. But your parents definitely not. But the obligation that gets you killed, meis yumas, okay? And by the way, Rashi says, it doesn't mean your father and mother. Because if you take the pasuk literally, it says makiv avi v'imei means your father and mother. Rashi says it means or mother, not father and mother. You get killed if you hit either one of them. Now, what's the pasuk saying? Because normally, if you hit another Jew, and you don't kill them, you don't get killed. You have to pay damages. You know, like we're going to learn later in the Chumash. But if you hit a parent and you make them bleed, so then the din is you get killed. Meis yumas.
Rabbi,
what?
I want to interject something. You're talking about you're not allowed to hit somebody in the face.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you said?
You can't hit him anywhere.
No, because in the boxing game,
yeah,
two guys are belting each other in the face every chance they get.
Yeah.
3 minutes a round for 15 rounds. Nobody arrests him.
First of all, there's a firm Jewish boxer, by the way. It's connected.
We need one.
It's connected. There is. It's connected to Chabad. He's very good.
Yeah, last time.
Last time.
At the
Taliban. Is it? In Las Vegas. Anyway, it's connected to Chabad in Las Vegas. He always goes to bouts after Shabbos is over, no matter what time Shabbos. He doesn't go to the... I don't know. I forgot his name.
He's a Chabadnik?
Yeah, I mean, he's a firm boy. He's about Shuvah. He's from... He's Russian, yeah. He's Russian out. Anyway... If a person hits his father and mother, the Torah says meis yumas, and meis yumas over here means choking. Bezin chokes you to death. Now this is if you cause him to bleed, okay, which poses a very interesting not only contemporary shayla, but the Gemara discusses this. In the olden time, and today it would be called a blood test. Well, in the olden time, they used to do what was called Hakosas Dam, bloodletting. You know, they used to, for healing, they used to take out blood and that would heal you. Mm-hmm. So the question is, can a doctor do bloodletting to his father? Because he is causing them to bleed.
Intentionally,
he's poking them and he's causing them to bleed. Or... Where are you going? Okay. What happens if a doctor is a surgeon? Can he perform surgery on his father or mother? Same question.
Save their lives, why not?
Because the question is...
Well, it's different depending on if he's the only doctor available for an operation that's important.
Okay, so one second. So Halacha says ideally, a child should not perform surgery or blood tests or anything that causes a parent to bleed because of this pasuk. What happens, halacha says, if there's nobody else, or, halacha says another point to it, the father wants the child to do it. He wants his child to do it because he trusts him, he thinks he's a better doctor, or whatever. The mother-in-law wouldn't let him, that's for sure. But the father or the mother would want their son, so then halacha says they are allowed to do it. Then they are allowed to do it. But it's an interesting, you can't cause anything, and that's what he says, you're not allowed to do it from your father, you're not allowed to cut out, let's say, a biopsy from them if it's going to cause them to bleed, or not to open a pus, you know, a wound that has pus in it, because taking out pus is really blood. So you can't cause that. Any types of things like that. Now, if there's another doctor, they have to let the doctor. If there's nobody else, you get allowed to do it. But again, or, poskim right in halacha, that if the parents dafka want the son to do it, so it's like there's no other doctor. Well, if it's accidental, this is not this din. This din is when the person hits his father and he's warned. Father or mother, and he's warned. And the only time you can get death is if you're warned. So, in other words, you can't have a boxing match with your father. You know what I mean? Or anything like that. Obviously, you need to be warned and all the details in front. Now, the halacha says that a ger, a convert, is not allowed to do it to the father either. Even though when they're converting, so to speak, they're like newborns. But nevertheless, it's still morally wrong to do it. It's interesting because even in the secular world, you should know, according to medical ethics, children are not supposed to do surgery on parents. They're too subjectively involved. They're too emotionally involved to be able to do it right. You know what I mean? Without getting too emotionally involved.
Even close relatives.
Yeah, b'chlal, they don't, parents or children would not do surgery on each other because of, moral, just the medical morals of it, medical ethics. But, now, what happens, they bring down in halacha, what happens if a kid under bar and bas mitzvah hits a father and makes him bleed? Now, as a kid under bar and bas mitzvah, they're not responsible. Nevertheless, halacha says, when they get older, they have to do tshuva. They should fast, they should do tshuva, because of the terrible crime that they did. Even the Alter Rebbe brings down in Hilchos Shabbos, the Alter Rebbe brings down the halacha, that when a kid becomes bar and bat mitzvah, they should still, even though they don't have to, because when they committed the crime, they were underage, nevertheless, they should. It's preferred and proper for an adult to do tshuva, to repent for all the sins they did when they were a kid. Because they still did something wrong. Now one second. If what happens if somebody intentionally hits their parents, makes them bleed, but there are no witnesses, so then God kills you. You get kares.
Now what? Unintentionally. Like
unintentionally is unintentional.
Just something happened. He's doing it with you, you know.
Yeah, what happens if you're working with your father? People work with their father with tools or machinery or whatever, and by mistake you poke the scissors into them or whatever. I mean, that's obviously what's accidental, like anything else. No, you're only if you kill him. The truth is, accidental, even in halacha, the definition of accidentally is, well, depends where. By many laws, the definition of infringed by Shabbos, accidentally desecrating Shabbos, doesn't mean you're leaning against the wall and by mistake the light goes on. That's not accidental. Accidental, by many laws.
So this is intentional?
One second. No, it's misathic, it's nothing. Accidental means I know what I'm doing, but I think I'm allowed to do what I do. Meaning, I forgot it was Shabbos. I'm waking up in my sleep. I forgot it was Shabbos. and I turned on the light. So I know that I'm turning on the light, but I forgot it was Shabbos. So I think that what I'm doing, I'm allowed to do. Or somebody thinks you're allowed to turn on the light on Shabbos. That's accidental. Now, falling down a ladder on top of somebody and killing him is not that I thought I'm allowed to do it. You know, I didn't know. Over there, you didn't know what I'm doing, what you're doing. I'm saying, you see, accidental murder is you don't know what you're doing, but something happened. It's hard to say. I mean, if somebody accidentally poked the father and mother and they made him bleed, or I'll give you another example, which probably doesn't work. You know, many, let's say mothers have eczema a lot of times on the hands, okay? And sometimes the kids are bad and they give them a patch and the parents start bleeding. Okay, the kid can come along and say, I didn't do it, you did it. Right? But that the kid did not actively make the parent bleed. The parent smacked the kid and because of that they bleed.
Oh, is it accidental or incidental?
What? It's
I don't know what you mean by that.
Incidentally.
It's too deep for my head. I don't know. Okay. So that's that din. Now the next pasuk says, the gainif ishum chorei, if somebody kidnaps somebody and sells him, v'nimtza b'yodei, and you find him in his hand, meaning, what do you mean you find it in his hand? Because if the guy sold him, he's not in his hand anymore. So Rashi explains what it means is, there are two witnesses that testified you kidnapped and sold. That means at the time you sold, it was v'nimtza b'yodei that the witnesses saw that you did it. So again, the din is meisumas, that you get killed. This pasuk explains something from the Ten Commandments. In the Ten Commandments it says, thou shalt not steal. So contrary to the English belief, thou shalt not steal of the Ten Commandments does not mean don't steal. It's forbidden to steal, but that's from another pasuk. When the Ten Commandments says don't steal, it means don't kidnap. Because kidnapping and selling is a capital punishment. All these sins of the Ten Commandments, all the mitzvahs of the Ten Commandments, are all capital punishment. Adultery, idolatry, murder, you know, all those things are capital punishment. So when the Torah says stealing, it has to mean a stealing which has capital punishment. Normal stealing doesn't have a capital punishment. The only stealing that does have a capital punishment is kidnapping if you sell. And this is what we're going to be reading Yom Kippur. We read about it on Tisha B'Av and in Yom Kippur, the 10 martyrs that were killed in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. I mean, all the greatest 10 tzaddikim of Rabbi Kiva's generation that were killed by the Romans in the time of the destruction of the Second Temple. So the Medrash says, why were they killed? To atone for the 10 brothers that kidnapped Yosef and sold him as a slave. Even though Yosef did it before the Torah was given, because the Torah wasn't given yet, but nevertheless, the brothers, and there were 10 brothers involved, because Binyamin was home and Yosef wasn't involved. So because of that, there are 10 brothers that kidnapped Yosef, you know, they threw him into the pit and then they sold him. So they transgressed this pasuk of stealing, kidnapping somebody and selling him, and the Torah says, meis yumas. So instead of killing them, God withheld the punishment for a very, very long time, probably 2,000 years or so, until the 10 martyrs were killed for the sin that Yosef's brothers did. Yeah?
But if Yosef didn't die, why do they have to die?
It doesn't say he'll die.
Well, you said they killed him. The Romans killed the 10.
Yeah. Because the kidnapper gets killed. And 10 brothers kidnapped Yosef.
Why are they liable? Because they're on that level of who they were?
Why shouldn't they be liable? Because the Torah wasn't given, you mean?
It's
2,000 years
after. I understand, but they were the Gilgul of those people, whatever. They were the reincarnation, and God holds back the punishment sometimes for different time. I understand, but the fact that we're wrong, and therefore they were killed. What?
Doesn't this mitzvah of not kidnapping and selling, doesn't that include that the kidnapper forces the person to work for them?
No. It just says if you kidnap him and sell him. That's all the pasuk says.
Here it says, this commentary here, it says one kidnaps a man, saying a parallel verse in Torah 24:7, Rashi comments that kidnappers are liable to the death penalty only if they force the victim to work for them and then sold him into slavery.
Okay, I see. You're right, yeah. Okay, so over there, Rashi, right. In Devarim, Rashi says that they're only if you make him work. But the brothers anyway were killed, because in their level was anyway bad.
In the, for the bloodletting of the parents, what if it's a stepfather or stepmother? Still applies?
No.
You can hit him.
She gave you permission.
I don't have one, though.
You're not a, they, it's not the parent, it's not capital punishment. It's only for biological parents, not even for adopted parents. Like, doesn't somebody call me today, can they sit shiva for a stepfather who passed away?
Can they?
I mean, he could sit shiva if he could, sit, you know, yeah, it's not the sin to sit shiva, but I'm saying, all the laws, these laws only apply to the biological parents. Not to adopted parents. Again, that doesn't mean you're allowed to kill him, you know, but hit him or whatever. But the law of getting to capital punishment is only for biological parents. Okay. By the way, this din of stealing refers to any aged person. If you steal, kidnap a baby, and you sell them, or any age, it doesn't matter. Obviously, the one committing the crime has to be an adult. Okay, next pasuk. Umekalul ove ve'imei meisumas. If somebody curses his father or mother, and this then applies whether you curse them when they're alive or after they die. Doesn't matter. Anytime you curse your parents, and again, the din is...
Was it the curse?
You curse them if you say, but obviously it has to be with God's name. He goes into all the, a lot of dinim over here. You have to say it with God's name, and you say that God should curse them, and so on and so forth. It has to be a proper curse, not the, not if you tell them drop dead. It has to be a real curse. No, it has to be with God's name and so on and so forth. And it says even more, even if your father is a complete Rasha, to the extent that Bezdin already is killing the father, you know, for the crimes he committed, the son's still not allowed to curse him. Under any circumstance, you can't curse him. And it says what happens if... if you curse your grandparents, then you get whipped. You don't get killed, you get whipped. And,
and father-in-law.
Huh?
Mother-in-law, you're allowed to curse?
Mother-in-law, you're allowed to
curse. No comment. What?
Father-in-law.
What?
I mean, is that a curse?
It's not it has to be a verbal curse. But he brings down, they bring down, who's this from? The halacha brings down an interesting scenario. What happens if your mother told you to do something? And then your father finds out about it and he gets angry. And he says to the son, who told you to do that? And if he says, my mother told me, the father will curse the mother. So it's considered as if you cursed the mother. In other words, according to Allah, and this American kids will never do, but according to Allah, you have to take the blame yourself.
This is a lie.
You're
lying.
Lying. Huh?
Save a life.
Save a life. Your own. No, first of all, you don't have to lie. You don't have to answer the question. You'll understand that you did it. Or you can say somebody, whatever. But here it comes out that even indirectly causing your mother to be cursed by somebody else is considered as if you cursed her. Okay, they ask an interesting question over here, and that is, skila, stoning, is worse than choking. There's four capital punishments in Torah: skila, sreifa, hereg, and chenek. Literally, it does not what they actually mean, though. Skila is stoning, sreifa is burning, hereg is killing with a sword, and chenek is choking. Okay, now skila, by the way, just for the record, doesn't mean you stand up in front of the wall and everybody throws rocks at you. That's not what stoning means. Yeah, well, they didn't learn the Gemara. They just learned the Chumash. What does it mean, stoning in Halacha? There was called a base of skila. There was a place 2 stories high, and a guy went up there. They threw him off, and if he died from the fall, they put a stone on his head. And that was it. If he came out alive, then they threw stones at him until he died. Right. That's skila. Sreifa doesn't mean you throw a guy into a fire. Burning. Burning means they gave him hot lead to drink. Boiling hot lead to drink. By the way, according to Torah, there's almost merciful ways of killing people. Hereg is made, you know, they kill you with a sword, they chop off your head. And chenek is they choke you. You they put you in whatever type of stuff, we'll leave that out. And then they say, I don't want to shorten myself, they tie a rope around your neck, and then one guy pulls, and that. Now, there's a din in Halacha. You have to know which one is a more severe punishment. Because Halacha says, what happens if a guy did 2 crimes that gets 2 different death penalties? Which one do you do?
Kill him twice.
Well, if you have 9 lives, you can kill him twice. What do you do? So the Torah says, you give him the harsher of the punishments. So there's an argument in the Mishnah and Sanhedrin, what is the order of the severity of the death penalties? And the halacha is, it goes, skila, sreifa, hereg, and chenek. Meaning, the most severe is stoning, then burning, then sword, and then choking.
What is more severe? It's more suffering?
It's considered a stricter punishment.
But it's not more suffering.
It's not more suffering. It's just considered a stricter punishment. Now, so they ask a question. By Mekalul Aviv Imei, okay, by cursing your parents, you get skila. If you make them bleed, you get choking. So they ask a question, why should cursing a parent be a more severe punishment than making them bleed? If you make them bleed, you only get choking, which is number 4 lowest. And if you curse them, you get skila, which is the number 1. It should be the opposite way. So he says that number 1, sometimes when there are certain sins that are more usual than others, they're more common than others, and in order to stop the common crime, the Torah sometimes give you a stricter punishment. In other words, if you ask somebody in the street, cursing a parent, big deal, what did I do to them? So I said a few words, I didn't hurt them, I cursed them. When you hurt them, you make them bleed, everybody can understand that's the worst crime already. So a guy will think, you know what, cursing is not so bad, I'll curse them, and hurting them I won't. So the Torah says, no. Just because you think cursing is not a problem, the Torah says you're going to get the strictest punishment for it.
It's cursing sometimes more painful for years.
No, cursing is even if they didn't hear you.
All right, like you said a couple of weeks ago, if looting becomes gets out of hand,
right?
They like order to shoot. You were saying that a couple of weeks
ago? Yeah. But here we're not even. That's generally speaking. Generally speaking, if there's an epidemic of any crime, like we said, what you're mentioning, if for stealing you don't get killed, there's no capital punishment for stealing. In Russia, they used to chop off your hand. But, you know, if for stealing you don't get capital punishment. But if there's an epidemic of stealing, so the courts have a right to say the next guy that steals is going to get killed. The courts are given that Torah authority in the case of an epidemic or things getting out of hand to stop it, to bring back civil obedience. The Torah, the Beis Din has the ability to say, even for stealing you're going to get killed, and they would kill you for stealing. If you remember, I mentioned this many times, in the 60s, a lot of guys, you guys weren't around in those days, but in the 60s when they had the riots in LA and in New York and in Chicago, remember those riots? Yeah,
I do.
Okay. 68. Huh?
68. 68.
Now I'm talking about the 68 riots. So there was a mayor in New York by the name of Mayor Lindsay. And when the Schwarzes were looting, Lindsay in New York said, okay, don't worry, let them go, just let them be, don't them. And my mayor, I'm a Chicago, and I had Mayor Daley, the old man, not this guy. And Mayor Daley said, shoot to kill. So the Chicago riot stopped in about 30 minutes. Daley said, shoot to kill. The next day, he told the cops, shoot to kill. And New York riots went on for weeks. And Chicago stopped in 30 minutes. He said, shoot to kill. And that, by the way, that's the Torah perspective. The Torah perspective says, when something gets out of hand, and the only way you could stop it is by putting down your foot and shoot to kill, then you shoot to kill. And you're allowed to do that. So sometimes they explain that some crimes that people think are not so severe, and therefore, you know, you can get away with it and do it more often. Over there, Dafka, the Torah says to be stricter and say that you're going to get a bigger punishment. And there's certain bechlal he brings down. There's certain punishments, certain sins. You know, it's, and we'll finish with this. The Alter Rebbe says something in Tanya. He brings out this whole concept of punishment and the severity of mitzvahs, which mitzvah is, so to speak, worse than others or stricter than our. He said the whole thing is illogical. He gives an example. For instance, somebody who openly, publicly desecrates Shabbos as a din like a non-Jew. Yet, to save a life, you desecrate Shabbos. Right? Even though Shabbos is such a harsh thing, makes you like a guy. Adultery doesn't make you like a guy. If somebody commits adultery, don't have a din like a guy. Yet, you have to give up your life rather than commit adultery. Since it doesn't make sense. Seemingly, Shabbos is stricter than adultery, because Shabbos makes you like a guy, and adultery doesn't. Yet, the Torah says, for Shabbos, you desecrate Shabbos to save a life, and for adultery, you don't. So what's the logic? So he says, it's completely illogical. And the same thing is in the punishments of Torah. Why this sin gets this type of punishment, and this sin gets this type of punishment, there must be Kabbalistic reason, whatever. But in simple halacha, is because this is what God said. And certain sins, you know, you react differently to them. Yeah.